Mate!
BT!
Dude, what are we fighting over today?
We've got some concert tickets. You guys Jason Aldean fans? That's right.
I like Jason Aldean. You went to a Jason Aldean concert on a date, didn't you?
Yeah. The date did not go too well.
What do you mean?
Yeah, the music was just kind of hard to hear. We were pretty far in the back.
Oh, you had some bad seats?
Yeah. You know,
lawn seats. Oh, lawn seats are great seats.
Yeah, they're not bad.
There's not a bad seat in the house out there.
It was just, we were pretty far, very far back.
Maybe you just didn't pick the right date for this one. Sometimes that's
not
a problem.
Probably not.
Anyways.
She wasn't listening to the music, or what was the problem?
I think she was trying. I don't know.
What did you do? Did you say, like, what are you, hard of hearing or something?
Oh my gosh, guys.
Yeah, actually, I am.
Yeah, no. I didn't know that going in. Okay.
Yeah, you probably said something real jerkish to her, didn't you?
How do you take a half-deaf person to a concert?
I didn't know.
Real nice first date. Anyways.
Deaf people go to concerts.
No. But like, first date.
They have sign language.
I found myself at Foo Fighters watching the lady signing Foo Fighters for half of the show.
Yep.
She was awesome.
Right?
Yeah. That was really good.
Yep.
Anyway, okay, now what are we fighting over?
So Jason Aldean tickets. He'll be at Hollywood Casino Amphitheater on Saturday, August 24th with special guest Kane Brown. For more information and to get your tickets, go to 101ESPN.com.
All right. Thanks, mate.
What are you going to say now?
Nothing, man.
Just throw it out there.
I thought it was a nice date.
It was a fantastic date.
Yeah, I really feel like that if we could get you on some more dates here, that could be a segment for us.
No, please, God,
I would love it.
Please, God.
Wouldn't that be great? Like, living vicariously through me?
I think that was probably my second worst Tinder date ever.
Really?
Yeah.
We'll get into that after the fight. We'll get into it after the fight. All right, here we go. Let's bring in today's fighter. It's Jason. Jason, how you doing, man?
Better than me.
Right.
First date.
You know, everybody has some first date problems, and not everything is going to be figured out on Bumble or Tinder. So,
I don't know if you know this, but sometimes, when it comes to Bumble, Tinder, people don't represent themselves honestly.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'm well past.
Yeah, I don't think they do.
Oh, I thought that you just had to be pretty much up front, out in the open.
I mean, you should try.
Yeah. It can be a scary thing.
But maybe you don't get all the details.
Right.
Well, you think you're going to get abducted, mate?
Maybe. Look at
him. You could.
Look at him.
Yeah.
Look at him.
Who wouldn't want this?
Yeah. Great question.
So we have to tie him up.
All right, Jason, you ready for this?
Let's do it.
All right. We just talked to Mark DeRosa a minute ago. Which team traded DeRosa to the Cardinals in 2009? Was it the Rangers, the Indians, or the Cubs?
Cubs.
Question number two. Along with Francisco Morales and Paul Torres, which major league player did the Cardinals get back from the Cubs in the 1995 Todd Zeal trade? Was it John Mabry, Rick Sutcliffe, or Mike Morgan?
Mabry.
Question number three, Jason. Former Dodgers GM Ned Colletti is going to join us a little bit later on in the show here at 4:30. Which slugger did Colletti and the Dodgers acquire in a deadline deal in 2008? Was it Manny Ramirez, Adrian Gonzalez, or Andrew Jones?
Manny Ramirez.
And question number four. Besides Chris Bryant, who was the last Cubs player to win the NL MVP? So before Bryant did it, was it Ryan Sandberg, Carlos Zambrano, or Sammy Sosa?
Oh, man. Zambrano went both. He didn't win them both. Sammy Sosa.
All right, let's bring in Randy. Jason, how you feeling?
50-50.
All right. No, that's pretty standard around here.
When is the last time somebody said, oh, I crushed that?
It doesn't happen very often. Jason, do you have any bad first date stories for us since Meat gave us one?
No, they've all just been absolutely perfect.
All right,
wow.
No, that's
way.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah, actually, I do have a few. Well, let's just say she was a little slow.
Okay.
So I didn't. Yeah, talking to her was not the best of affairs by any means. So generally, you expect some sort of a response when you ask a question, as opposed to a blank stare.
That's a tough date right there.
Sometimes you gotta look past it. Come on.
You do. Meet your
fine
would
look at past that. It.
You're good at that. Randy, say hi to Jason.
Hey, Jason, how you doing?
For a chance.
I am doing fantastic. How are you, Ed?
Doing well. Thanks for listening. Thanks for playing. He called me Ed. by the way, did Big Sizz was his first date story about that woman who is not listening right now?
That was the one. Yeah.
That was the second worst, okay.
Depends which side of the room the radio's on.
There were other bad ones.
Which we're going to get into after this. But yes, yeah, it was Randy. All right, you ready for this, Randy?
Ready.
All right, D-Row. Mark DeRosa joined us just a few minutes ago. Which team traded Mark DeRosa to the Cardinals in 2009?
In exchange for Chris Perez, who became the Indians' closer, it was the Cleveland Indians.
By the way, picked the Cardinals picked the right guy to send that way because
yes,
it was going to be him or Mott.
Yep.
And I think that worked out pretty well.
Yeah. Although Chris Perez's dog kept having stuff delivered to the house.
Yeah, his dog was a pothead, turned out. It happened. It's not for me. It's for my dog.
You on Amazon again?
He's got glaucoma.
All right. Question two. Along with Francisco Morales and Paul Torres, which major league player did the Cardinals get back from the Cubs in the 1995 Todd Zeal trade?
Can I give you a quick story first?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Cardinals were going to make this trade. And by the way, it's Mike Morgan, who was, when they got him, the statistically worst starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. And he wound up winning a World Series with the D-backs in 2001. Another great story about Mike Morgan is that Tony La Russa wrote him a handwritten letter saying you should retire when he cut him, and that didn't make Morgan very happy. But the Cardinals were going to make this deal. They were going to send Zeal to the Cubs for Morgan and those two other guys you mentioned, and they decided, what the hell? Why have two press conferences? Why don't we just fire Torrey now? And that's how they decided to fire Torrey at that time.
Oh.
So that they could have a two-in-one press conference.
Okay.
Bang for your buck.
Yeah.
It's easier for the media to show up to one thing.
Yeah, it was.
I think that was nice of him.
Joe Torre didn't think so.
Well,
he goes upstairs.
That was
so he's going to talk to Walt about the trade the night before the deal is made. He goes upstairs to talk to Walt, and he left his briefcase down in his office. Comes downstairs, and the clubhouse guys are cleaning out his office.
Thank you.
So they thought he had left, and they're cleaning all. They're taking all the Godfather
that
pictures
sucks.
Down from his office. And
wow.
So that's how Joe found out he was getting fired.
At least you don't have to hire movers.
Hey, Jason, are you working right now?
No, thank the Lord. Right?
What are you doing over there?
Yeah,
you're having a conversation.
Are we bothering you?
Yeah, you guys would completely just waste all of my time, I guess. So.
All right.
We're good.
Okay.
Who are you talking to? Jason, who are you talking to back there?
I mean, I'm already not winning, right?
With that attitude.
Well.
Maybe you're the one that doesn't listen on the dates.
I don't know. Touché, Brett.
Question number three, Randy. Ned Colletti will join us shortly. Mm-hmm. Which slugger did Colletti and the Dodgers acquire in a deadline deal in 2008?
That must have been the Manny deal, huh? Yeah, I guess it was Manny. Well, I thought that was 2009, 2008. Well, Ned, that was only his third year, right? Five, six, seven, fourth year there. I thought it was, I'll go with Manny. I thought that was 2009, but I'll go with Manny.
And question number four, Randy. Before Chris Bryant, who was the last Cubs player to win the NL MVP?
Probably Sammy Sosa in 98.
We've got a winner. Jason, he got you, man. 4-2. It is the Indians that traded DeRosa to the Cardinals in 2009. Mike Morgan was the other player in the deal in 1995, along with Francisco Morales and Paul Torres. It is Manny Ramirez that Ned Colletti, who will be joining us, he acquired, and Manny Wood was born. It was incredible. And Sammy Sosa was the last Cubs player before Chris Bryant to win the NL MVP. Jason, thanks for playing, man. Try again, and best of luck on all your future dates.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jason. We used to do a Jersey Day once a month. We would all wear jerseys in.
Oh, I thought it was going to be like Jersey Shore Day.
No, here at the Fastlane. And I bought a Manny jersey. I had a number 99 Manny Dodgers jersey for one of those Jersey Days.
Well, it was a hot jersey to be wearing.
It was. I didn't have the dread wig. But
that was big.
Yeah.
That was really big.
Yeah, they sold a lot of those in L.A. It's 4:14. Your time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. What does the future hold for Harrison Bader, and does he have much market value? That's next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. That's USA Today's Bob Nightingale yesterday here in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. And it was interesting to hear him bring up the name of Harrison Bader. And it wasn't long after that that Henry Schulman of the San Francisco Chronicle tweeted that perhaps the Giants would have interest in Bader, too. The defensive prowess of Harrison Bader is well known throughout baseball. Let's start with this, though, fellas. He's hitting 195. The Cardinals are past the 100-game mark of the season. Do you think they sent him down to fix him, or do you think they sent him down because there's a chance that they could move him?
You don't send somebody down because there's a chance you move him. Your value goes down once you get sent down. So that would make less sense. Now, that's not to say that Harrison Bader can't be involved in a trade. Certainly he can, just for the reasons that you just mentioned. He's great defensively. He is hell on the base paths when he gets on the base paths. And you believe in the upside of Harrison Bader. But I think it's more so of just getting him back on track. If I was looking at Harrison Bader, by the way, if I'm another team, I would definitely want to trade for him because I would believe in a guy that has only had limited shots in the big leagues and pretty good shots. I mean, the Cardinals have given him an extended look, but he's still a really young player, a young hitter with those other tools. So I would love to be able to trade for him. But I think that the thing that the Cardinals would want the most is that he gets his swing and he gets himself figured out. And then all of a sudden they can plug him back into the lineup. They can plug him into center field and he can be out there for the foreseeable future.
I do think they send him down with that exact same hope. But the byproduct is if he does really well and you see how other things play out for them in the next couple of months, then maybe he does become tradable once again. Because I agree with you. I believe there are teams that are certainly interested in him and would like to see what they could get from him, but they also know his value is nothing right now. So you are dealing, if you were to try to trade him now, you're dealing from a position of no strength at all. So I think a team would absolutely take a chance on him, but they know. I mean, they probably think he might be really good someday, but I know I don't have to give you anything for him. So if there was a deal to be made, certainly there's not enough time for him to get his stock up before tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So this would be an off-season kind of thing if they feel like their other in-house options are going to be better.
It was tweeted, Tom Ackerman tweeted today that John Mozeliak said when asked, would you be willing to part with Dylan Carlson? He said, through my dead hands. So the
didn't
Cardinals
say no.
No. So with a Rosarena and Dylan Carlson on the way, it seems like you have the logical future replacements for a Harrison Bader. And all of these guys are not going to be able to be moved to the corner because you're going to need to put some power into your corner outfield spots, whether it's Tyler O'Neill or somebody else. It doesn't seem as if there is room for all of these outfielders that the Cardinals have.
No,
so somebody's going to have to move.
Yeah, and that's generally how it is in almost every position. You always have this with pitching. While you have a lot of players that you like, you realize that not all of them can impact you at the big league level. So sometimes you have to make some moves. And the issue is you got to pick the right guys to be able to mm-hmm. hang on to and
Oscar
move
Mercado.
On from. Damn it, that's what I was going to get to. is maybe that's been a bit of a challenge here recently, is picking the right guy. And I know that you're always going to worry about letting the wrong one go, but you know what? That shouldn't hinder you from making moves that you believe is going to make your major league ball club better at a given time. So who knows what it's going to be with Randy Arozarena. I think he's an interesting case. I do believe that the way that they've handled him already kind of tells you that they wanted other guys to be the guy first. I mean, he's done nothing but light it up in AAA, and he still hasn't gotten the call. Now, roster spots are tight. We had this conversation yesterday. Is sometimes you want to wait at this time of year. You want to wait till the dust settles from the trade deadline to figure out what your 40-man looks like
right.
to be able to make a move to get a guy onto it. So maybe that's what they're waiting for with Arozarena. I did want to hit on this with Harrison Bader because I'm interested, and I know that Harrison, and we heard from Mike Schilt yesterday, and it was before the news of Harrison Bader getting sent out, but he talked about, man, we love his game. We love everything about him, the drive that he has. He wants it so bad. He even said that he wants it so bad sometimes, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, it can hinder what he's doing because he, like, presses. He tries so hard.
It works against you.
Yeah, well, now you have Harrison Bader, who was trotted out as the next guy. He was going to be the center fielder for the St. Louis Cardinals, a team that was going to go out and compete for a championship. He's out there in your new victory blue uniform showing it off, and now he's in Memphis after being up in the big leagues for a long time. He was here. He's got a place here. Like, he's ingrained in St. Louis, and then you're not. It's very difficult. I remember it got easier as it went on. But I remember the first time I got sent down. I got called up early in 05. I spent the whole year in the big leagues. Mm-hmm. Broke camp in 06 with the Cardinals. And about a month into the season, I believe it was, ended up getting sent down. That was like the hardest thing ever because I was like, no, I thought I was a big leaguer. Like, I thought that was, you know, what this is. So getting mentally right to go back to AAA, you don't get sent to AAA because you're doing things great. Like, you have to go there and make adjustments, and you have to do so quickly and figure things out and have an approach. You have to be mentally in a really good state. I hope that Harrison's able to be there.
For you, was there a gap between being sent down and getting to that better mental place? And was that gap spent on Beale Street?
No, the gap wasn't spent. Maybe one night or something. You know what mine was, though? It was more of there's that sadness in it.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of pissed off in me all the time, too, and I was angry about it. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to prove to them this is a wrong decision. And 2 weeks later, I had the opportunity. I was called right back up. Probably sent out 2 weeks after that. And like I said, it gets easier each time. But
one of the Duncan Yo-Yo.
Yeah, that's fine. You know, you got to know who you are. You got to know your role, as DeRosa was talking about. But no, it is something that I'm sure there's a sadness about it. Well, he probably won't tell anybody about that. You might see the angry side of it more. But he's got to be able to lock right back in and get right back to work, because he's got the opportunity to affect this team, barring some sort of a trade, in a major way. But you have to be right to do so. The last thing I'd want to see for Harrison Bader is him to be upset, maybe throw a pity party, and miss out on 2 weeks of getting better and making adjustments so you can get back to the big league level. Because, unfortunately, nobody at AAA is going to feel bad for you. Nobody's going to feel bad that you're there. It's like, oh, Harrison, that sucks, man. I'm sorry for you.
Hey, those other pitchers, they're going to keep throwing sliders,
well,
man.
Of course they are. Yes, and AAA, I mean, he's had some time at AAA, and he's thrived, you know, he's done quite well. But everybody has a book on you. And by the way, all of your teammates want the job that you just had. Everybody wants to be called up and be in the big league. So it's going to be a battle. It's going to be a fight. And he's going to have his head screwed on the right way.
And by the way, he'll be down there with both Carpenter and Ozuna, who are both on rehab stints. And Ron, you showed me Derek Gould tweeting that the Cardinals have pulled Jed Jerko back from his rehab assignment, and they're exploring trade options now that he is healthy and ready to play somewhere. It could be moved before the deadline, and I would think could be DFA'd.
And there was another tweet that I had seen right around that time that he was apparently sitting in his locker and was confused by what they were doing. He doesn't appear to be very happy, but I guess I wouldn't be either. If I'm him,
no, he wants to play here and he wants to play somewhere, and he probably won't get, especially with Edmund here now, he will not get that opportunity.
Hey, how's Carpenter doing?
0-for-19.
Oh, damn it.
Coming up. Was it allowed 0-for-19? Probably not.
Coming up here in the fast lane, former Dodger GM Ned Colletti will join us and tell us about what these days are like. He's next on 101 ESPN. Cardinal President of Baseball Operations John Mozeliak with Dan McLaughlin on Scoops with DannyMac.com. You can hear all of that entire interview at Scoops with DannyMac.com. With Cardinal World Series champ Brad Thompson and Chris Ronji, I'm Randy Carricker. And we head back now to the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line and our friend, the former Giants assistant GM and Cubs assistant GM, in addition to being the general manager of the Dodgers, now a great analyst on Sportsnet LA, Ned Colletti joins us. Ned Colletti, it's great to have you with us. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, first off, how about those St. Louis Blues?
I bet you love that, huh? I know you're a lifelong Cubs fan, but you had to love
it. I didn't like they beat the Sharks, but it was fine after that.
We're still riding that wave, Ned, as you can imagine.
What a great moment. Great thing. Yep.
Ned,
what's going on out there?
Man, well, we're waiting like everybody else right now, Ned, for that big shoe to drop. And I think that most people looked at this year and looked at the trade deadline, and with the August 31st deadline being gone, that there were going to be a lot of moves and a lot of stuff going on. It doesn't really feel like it's going to. Do you believe that everything's going to start picking up momentum here soon?
I think in the last hour or two, I think you'll see a lot happen. I think the different deadline has got those that are in the sell mode. They know they got to maximize whoever they're going to trade off. And you've got a lot of teams in the wild card. And wild card teams are interesting because some teams can make it out of there. The Giants, I think, won two World Series out of wild card spots, went to a third. It can happen. But, you know, you got to really measure your credibility and your chance to do that accurately. Because it is a little bit longer road, especially with the play-in game, which burns one of your starters and, you know, probably a couple bullpen guys. But I do think that's got a little bit of an effect on it, although some wild card teams haven't been to the playoffs in 10 years or whatever. So getting to one game for their franchise is a big step forward. So I think you got some of those things going on, and I think that I think you'll see a lot the last hour or two. What happens at this point in time, if you're a seller, and you're going to move a top-end relief pitcher, let's say. You've got five teams interested, all right? And everybody's kind of stalled. In the last 24 hours, people kind of stall where they are, and they wait to see. And that team knows if they're going to make the deal or not. But they don't know that somebody's not going to up the ante and let them go back and up the ante someplace else. You've got no reason as a seller to really do anything except wait it out. At this point in time, you're pretty much out of the bullseye of a injury. That's the only thing a seller's ever got to really be concerned with, is somebody going down if it's the last two or three or four weeks. But I think you'll see some activity tomorrow. I think teams know what they're willing to do, but they're going to wait it out and see if somebody steps forward with one more prospect, a little bit of cash, or decides to take one less player back.
Bob Nightingale had reported GMs, there's a growing sentiment amongst them that they would like to see the deadline moved back a couple of weeks. Do you think that would change much?
I think it would. I think it's when I first heard the rumblings that they were going to change the deadline, I thought, you know what, it's going to change the game, because you've got teams that with roughly 50-some games to play are telling their clubhouse, their manager, their coaching staff, and their fan base, we're out. We're out. And that's early to say we're out. 15th gives you a couple more weeks to really see if you are out or not. It lets you know kind of it may increase the value of those you are trading, because players are going to get hurt in the next 2 weeks, or teams' weaknesses, even the contenders, may get a little bit more shaky on how they think they can survive the month of October. I think that would be probably a deadline that gets it going. You know, I thought, you know, another idea from, you know, that comes from my early days was there was a deadline at the winter meetings.
And I remember that.
Winter meetings, how they've slowed down, and it's really kind of a free agent fest, and that's even slowed down. But if you put a deadline at the end of the winter meetings where teams weren't allowed to make a deal until the season started again, you might see some more action there too. But without a deadline, there's far more reasons to say no than there are to say yes.
Former Dodgers GM Ned Coletti with us in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. And Ned, arguably the biggest trade you made was that deal when you brought Adrian Gonzalez and Carl Crawford to L.A. on August 25th of 2012. Was there any discussion of that deal before July 31st of that year?
Yeah, there was. And sometimes deals come come quick. Some days deals come a long time. I had talked to Ben Charrington the end of April about Adrian. And it took him until the end of August, really, to be comfortable with knowing where his team was at. And it was a team that in Boston struggled for one of the rare times. So it just took a while. You know, a trade that I think had a much greater impact on the franchise actually came about the morning of the trading deadline. And that was Manny Ramirez in 2008. 6 o'clock in the morning is when Theo first contacted me about Ramirez. And we had to get the deal done by 1 p.m. Pacific. So that deal took 7 hours to come to fruition. Three-way deal, including Pittsburgh. More than $7 million in cash we took back along with Manny. We traded Andy LaRoche and Brian Morris, a couple guys that played in the big leagues for a little while with Pittsburgh and other teams. But we were able to change our franchise drastically. But we went to, as we closed down July 30th, that deal was not on the table.
Wow. And it is amazing how much money plays a role in this. You mentioned the money you took back with Manny. And there, you had an interesting anecdote in your book about how you were working to get a little bit of money out of Boston, and you had to have a meeting with the owners because they just wanted to get the deal done, right?
Well, that was the Adrian Gonzalez
deal.
Was more of that nature. Different ownership, different place and time, different factors. Dodgers were kind of in the process of trying to rebuild their brand a little bit and kind of gain the credibility back from some fans with the new ownership that came in about 4 months prior to that deal. But you think about that. Now, that was a deal that's made after July 31st, and that was a waiver deal where everybody had to clear waivers. And I had two of the players that I sent to Boston who had been claimed in the minor leagues, because there's a minor league section to this too, back in the day when there was the waiver period for the month of August. You can put a minor league player, you put your, let's say, your 30th player. If you got a 40-man roster and you got 25, everybody's healthy, so a player that's in that group of, let's say, 15, if everybody's healthy, that sits on your 40-man but's not in the big leagues. To trade them, you need waivers on them as well. But that period of time, once you get waivers, is only good for 3 days. So I had two players that had been claimed by other teams that I was sending to Boston that I had to pull back from that and then shut them down for the rest of the season and send them to Boston when the season ended. You'll see two players to be named later as you look at the dynamics of that deal because of the way things were set up at that point.
Ned, do you have any trades that didn't go down? Maybe you had some talks or ones that you did end up pulling the trigger on that still bother you to this day?
The trade that we got so close to doing and we got stopped at the 1 yard line was a deal with Cleveland. It was a Saturday. I can remember it vividly. It was a Saturday in San Francisco. The Dodgers were playing there. We had a little bit of an early evening game, and I thought I could get CeCe Sabathia and Casey Blake and Jamie Carroll from Cleveland for five prospects. One of them being a true big leaguer in Carlos Santana, and then four guys that were kind of had some promise but didn't really make it to the big leagues or stick very long if they did. And at the last minute, I got it canceled out by ownership that didn't want to give up the prospects and do all that. And so that one is one that I think would have changed our course of history a little bit. We went to the LCS that year. Having CC at the top of our staff would have been great. If you look what he did with Milwaukee, as you guys in St. Louis know, he went to the Brewers about 48 hours after I bowed out of the Cleveland talks. He went to the Brewers on a Monday or a Tuesday. And if you look it up, the Saturday before that, we were playing in San Francisco. But that's the one that I wish we would have had a chance to do. But, there's always people that have got greater authority, and rightfully so, than you do. And that's so that one got stalled. And then about 10 days later, I did make the deal for Casey Blake because I was desperate for a third baseman. And I had to put Santana in that deal because Cleveland knew that I was desperate for it. They knew that I had come close on the other one, so they were going to hold me up on that. And we had a second-year catcher, all-star, already there in Russell Martin, and we didn't necessarily believe that Carlos was going to be an everyday National League catcher. So I had to put him in a deal, and Cleveland paid us Casey Blake's salary as well. I think that year of 2008, we got Manny's salary paid for, Casey Blake's $2-plus million paid for, and Greg Maddux, who was hovering around $2 million by the time we got him from San Diego in August. So we were trying to make deals for difference-making players and also getting cash alongside of it.
Good job, Ned.
For a while.
As you know, when moves don't work, when organizational philosophies don't end up working out, the general manager is the first guy who will take the blame for it from the fan base. But you did mention it just a moment ago that there are people that have a greater say than you do whenever you are a GM. So how much and I know it's different in every situation, but generally speaking, how much autonomy does a GM have when it comes to moves that are made and in particular significant ones?
I would take a guess. This is just an educated guess. I don't think there's any GM or president of baseball operations that has full autonomy. I don't think anybody does. I think different ones have different levels of conversation with the owners of their clubs. But I don't think there's any owner in baseball that wakes up or goes turns on the television at 3:05 p.m. Central Time and finds out his team just acquired a guy that's going to cost him $10 million and four prospects. You know, I think there's so much communication, so much interaction. I think everybody's accountable, and I think that you're always going to have a relationship with your owner that they're going to know what you're thinking, why you're thinking it, what else you've thought about, and I think that's part of the process. Might somebody have autonomy to do whatever they feel like doing and just give the owner a heads up? Yeah, they may. You know, I would probably, if you're forcing me to guess, I'd say nobody does, but there might be somebody.
Ned, you know, being around the game forever, there are some players that in the biggest moments, they love it. They thrive on it, and they step up in those moments when the pressure is on. I think that right now is a time for general managers when the pressure is on. Do you believe the same thing can be said around baseball for some GMs, that in these moments they thrive and maybe some of them even get better in the moment?
I think they do. And I think as you get to this point, I think that when you have, and I think you have really three different, quote, divisions of baseball right now. You've got really the super teams, of which I would certainly say the Dodgers are one of them. You've got the teams that are kind of clustered in the middle, which is the majority of them. And then you've got the teams that are going to try not to lose 100 games, which might be two or three, and another four or five that are trying not to lose 90. I think that whenever you're making a deal, especially if you're one of those super teams and you're trying to get to the last game of October and win it, I think you've got to be careful on who you select. It's one thing to be a very good player in a smaller market that draws 10, 15,000, 20,000 people, and you're playing to win 75 games or you're playing to finish 500. The stakes are different than other markets. The stakes are different when there's 50,000 people looking at you and your expectation is not to get to the postseason, not even to really get to the World Series, but to win the World Series. And I don't think that's made for everybody. There's a lot of players that are really good players from April till September. Then the hotter the lights get, they're a little bit less dependable. And I think it goes the other way too. There's some players that are game for everything, and they may not be the big headline grabber, but there's somebody that can really come forward and do some big things in the heat of the minute. The Dodgers got one right now that you guys had for a while, and David Freese.
Mm-hmm, no doubt.
I don't think David Freese was ever the headliner, but you look at the way he plays in October. I mean, goodness, you take that every year. And I think there's a difference in that.
Ned, two more quick things. Number one, the Dodgers have the best record in baseball, 69-39. You watch them and cover them every single day. Is there anything the Dodgers need to do before tomorrow?
Well, I think if they could add a bullpen piece, I think that would be helpful. They have so much depth, and they really grind out at bats. You know, pitching, I think, is watered down. And most pitchers, not most, many cannot throw effective strikes. And they really take advantage of teams that have young pitching or pitchers that can't make command. But they I think the bullpen is the one area. If they could add somebody, I think they would like to do that. They may also have two or three options out of their starting rotation that can improve their bullpen. That's how they're built. They're built with 6-7 starting pitchers. They're built with deep depth everywhere. A lot of versatility in their infield, outfield. Even their catchers play more than one spot. And I think that it's a very well-constructed team. But I think if you can add one more bullpen piece, it may fortify you a little bit more. Because you do have, with this deadline being where it is, you've got three more months to play. So this is not just two more months to play. In their mind, mm-hmm. You know, they got 90 days left after this. Yeah.
And finally, Ned, Mo said at the beginning in that cut that we heard that this time is fun. How would you categorize, as in your time as a general manager, the 72 hours leading up to the deadline?
Randy, the best. It was the absolute best. Loved it. Two cell phones, landline. I mean, you have all kinds of action going on. You learn a lot. You learn so much about people, players, your players. You find out how other people think about your players. You make it makes you kind of rank your own players and really get down to business as a who's who in your own organization and in somebody else's organization. And it was the best. It was the absolute best. It was the best 72 hours for 25 years, right here, right now.
Hey, great to hear your voice. Congratulations on the great work on the Emmys that you're winning in L.A., and we'll have to talk soon.
Absolutely. Always like talking to you guys. I don't like the Cardinals. I don't like St. Louis. They beat my Cubs when I was a kid, and they beat my Dodgers when I was running the Dodgers. So you know what? I love you guys.
Thanks, Ned. We'll see you, brother. That is Ned Coletti. He loves St. Louis, by the way. And he joins us on 101 ESPN. From MLB trade rumors to a couple of stars sitting out the NFL preseason, we've got your hot topics of the day next on 101 ESPN. The Cardinals are back in action tonight after taking off last evening. They're going to open a three-game series with the team that shares the top spot in the NL Central with them, the Chicago Cubs. And the Cardinals will pitch Adam Wainwright. Hopefully he'll turn in his normal sterling performance on his home field. And he'll be opposed by the Cubs right-hander. Who is going for Chicago?
Yu Darvish.
Yeah, you. That's right.
No, not me.
No,
Randy.
No, he's not
it's
going.
Be
no,
you. BT Darvish. Retired. The Cardinals Darvish. Wish it was me going.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. No, I can say that, Randy. You can stop.
Oh. Well, glue guy, man. Glue guy.
Yeah.
That's true.
And the Cardinals, with a couple of roster moves today, they have picked up Adalberto Mejia on waivers from the Angels. Left-handed pitcher is going to be on the 25-man roster. So you got that going for you.
I saw Adalberto.
Let's call him Al for now.
I saw the Al M, and I thought, oh.
Adalberto. Yeah. Adalberto.
They got Mondesi?
That's what I was hoping.
Ooh. Yeah, they didn't.
Because he changed his name from Raul. That was very easy to Adalberto.
Adalberto.
Real nice.
So yeah, Adalberto is a member of the Cardinals. Marcell Ozuna going out on a rehab assignment. The Cardinals also apparently are trying to move Jed Jerko. They took him off the 40-man roster and put him on the 60-day DL, and apparently he's not too happy about the situation.
Yeah, by all appearances, Jed's saying, nah, I'm good. I'm ready to play. Mm-hmm. Now I need a spot. So
ready for his rehab assignment, they said, no, you're not going
well,
there.
Well, you could tell the way that things were trending that they were going to have to find a fit for Jed Jerko at the very least in the offseason. So no surprise that this is being expedited a little bit. So hopefully they're able to find something and get a little something for Jed. Still owed a good amount of money, so we'll see.
Matt Carpenter is 0-for-19 in his minor league rehab stint. He's going to continue that stint moving from Springfield back to Memphis. So Ozuna, along with Carpenter and Harrison Bader, are going to be in the starting lineup for the Memphis Redbirds. All three in the Cardinals starting opening lineup on opening day.
That's not good.
No, three of you starting eight.
That is not good.
And you don't have
– so at least they're comfortable.
Honestly,
they have friends.
Honestly, two of them you'd kind of want to keep there. And Harrison Bader is certainly there, and he's there to get right and get ready. But Matt Carpenter, I mean, right now –
19, ouch.
Yeah, right now it's like you got to wait as long as you can until you end up getting him right. And that sucks. Yet the Cardinals, again, while they're flawed and they have their issues and guys have been hurt and things haven't gone as planned, they're in first place. Mm-hmm. Like, so, you know, while there's not a ton of excitement there, are you saying sunshine and lollipops? Yeah. I got that going right now. You're playing the Cubs. You got a chance to just have first place outright after tonight.
Nine games played between these teams, six at Wrigley, three at Busch, and the home team has won every game so far this year.
Yeah, keep it up.
Yeah.
So 10 games left to go of the 57 the Cardinals have left. Mm-hmm. Against 10 against the Cubs, 9 against the Brewers. So this is the time to make some moves, fellas.
Controlling your own destiny, which I always thought you couldn't control.
Well, no, you totally control your own destiny. I mean, that's all you, even though it's destiny by nature. I hope that Harrison Bader, because it got me thinking about it when you mentioned Ozuna and Carpenter in the lineup with him. I hope that he doesn't... I hope that he doesn't approach this like he's on rehab also.
Yeah.
Like, all right, well, I'm just going to go get some reps, do my thing. No.
You got to get better.
You got to get fixed. Yep. You got to figure it out.
Here's the Cardinal lineup for tonight. Edmund Fowler in center and Jose Martinez. Goldschmidt, DeYoung, and Wonger. O'Neill in left. Weeders behind the plate. And Waino on the mound. The trade deadline is tomorrow. As we mentioned, the Cardinals did pick up Adalberto Mejia. But not much movement. There is an interesting story, though, from Tim Brown of Twitter, friend of the show. He says that the Astros and Giants are engaged in discussions regarding Madison Bumgarner. Tim Brown writes, long considered a major rental starter for this summer's trade market, Bumgarner's availability has increasingly come in question as the Giants have risen in the standings. And while Brown cautions there's no indication as to the seriousness of the discussions, it seems notable that there is dialogue at all.
The Astros picked up Bumgarner, and I still believe that they're going to be in the market for a starting pitcher, whoever it is. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because they acquired Verlander and rattled off a World Series. I think that would almost piss me off. I don't know why. I'm not close to either one of these teams. Don't care that much. I just don't want them to get him for some reason.
They're proactive. They go and get it done. And that's a team that's probably right now, I'd say, the American League World Series favorite.
Yeah.
And if they go get him, I think that pretty much solidifies
it. See, and that's the thing. When you're a team that is right there, you're on the cusp, when everything else is ready-made. Like, you look at that ball club, and there are very few holes on the Astros, you can make moves like that. You can get out of your comfort zone. You can ship off maybe a prospect that you didn't want to ship off because a team wants to hang on to a player. Like, you can do that because you believe you can win a World Series with your team. That's a nice position to be.
It's not going
to
kill their future either, because they know they've got a lot in the pipeline too, and they have a terrific development system. Everything they do there over the last several years has been very good.
And one football note for you. This is big news for Meat. Tyreek Hill suffered a bruised quad and is not participating in Chiefs practice this afternoon. No word as to whether or not he was hit by his 3-year-old son.
I'm guessing not.
Allegedly.
So. Oh, yeah. Say that for sure. Well, you know, karma hurts.
So does it getting smacked in your quad?
Just a bruised quad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes kids actually pack more of a punch than you'd expect.
It's surprisingly.
Especially when they
lethal,
hit you and you're not looking. Like, my son's got me a couple of times. I'm just like, you son of
a. Is it the right height, too?
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah, that height thing is. That can be a bad deal.
He's got
deal.
Me with a kidney shot before, too, where I'm like, I got to go see if I'm going to pee blood. Like, I think that you got me pretty good. Had a baby.
While you were standing up?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. Right
just
behind
you.
Sometimes he thinks we're wrestling when we're not, you know. And then he gets down. He's like, "You want some?"
Huh? Thank goodness that blackout rage is gone.
Yeah, no, very true. Yeah. Very true.
Those are your hot topics of the day on 101 ESPN. Hey, if you've got a little old lady in your neighborhood that loves cats, it's time to call the police.
Right, meow.
That's next before Teoli on 101 ESPN.